Well, it's a great privilege to be here and to speak on the Catholic family, to try to tie everything that we've been learning this weekend together during this last talk on how to build strong Catholic family. My favorite story about the family is that one day an executive came home from work and he had a very hard day at work, so he came home to relax and to read the paper. So he sat down in the den and he opened up the newspaper and he started to read, and his little six-year-old boy came up and says, "Daddy, I want to ask you a question." Well, the father answered the question. The boy ran off. 5 minutes later, he came back. "Daddy, I have another question for you." Well, the father knew that he was not going to be able to relax and read the paper. So he turned to the weather map and he said, "Son, let's play a game." So he took the weather map and he ripped it up into 20 pieces and gave the kid some tape and said, "Come back when you put the United States back together." Well, the father figured he had like an hour to read the paper. The boy came back 5 minutes later, and the United States was perfectly taped back together. The father says, "How did you do it so quickly?" The boy says, "Well, Dad, when I turned one of the pieces over, I noticed that there was a picture of the family. So I put the family back together, and the United States took care of itself." And that's what the Holy Father says in Familiaris Consortio, that the family is the basic unit of society. It is the most important cell in the church. And it really is the only thing to save society in our present age. To try to save society in any other way than through the family is like straightening the deck chairs on the Titanic as it's sinking. The only way to save society is through building strong Catholic families. Father Hardin says that as we approach into the next century, into the next millennium, the only families that will be able to survive are extraordinary Catholic families. The ordinary, average family, Father Hardin says, will not be able to survive as we go into the next millennium because of the pressures and because of the challenges that face the family from today's society, whether it be through the media or through other ways, other challenges. And so we need, during this weekend, to reflect upon building a strong Catholic family, an extraordinary Catholic family, families of faith, families of heroism, families of virtue. So I'd like to take the word family and give you six ideas based upon the word family, each beginning with a letter from that word. The first letter, of course, is F, and family, which stands for faith. That the first ingredient I'd like to talk to you about is faith. This is the foundation of our Catholic religion. It's the foundation of every family. A strong family is one with strong faith. It's the bedrock of our religion. It's the foundation upon which all else is built. Now, the Empire State Building is actually five stories deep into the ground. That's the foundation for the Empire State Building. So whenever we want to build something, we need the strong foundation. And the foundation of healthy families is faith. What the Holy Father calls the family a domestic church, the first seminary, where the seed of faith is planted and then brought to fruition. The Holy Father sees families as the source of vocations, as the fertile soil through which the vocations can flourish and to grow. The family is the means in which husbands and wives can get each other closer to God, to bring each other to heaven, and to lead their children to heaven as well. Just yesterday I told a little story about Bishop Sheen to one of the ladies in the nursing home about heaven. Bishop Sheen was in Philadelphia. He was driving to give a talk at the town hall, and he got lost. So he stopped at a playground and asked one of the kids to come over and said, "Can you tell me how to get to the town hall?" And the kid says, "Why? What do you want to go there for?" He says, "I want to give a talk." And the kid says, "About what?" And Bishop Sheen says, "About heaven and how to get there." The kid says, "You don't even know how to get to the town hall." So the family is called to be the instrument to bring one another to heaven. So I'd like to give some practical suggestions on how to develop faith within one's family. First of all, as parents, I'd like to address one point, and that is to develop your own faith first, to try to develop as strong a faith as possible. You know, when you go in an airplane, when the stewardess is about to, when they're about to take off, the stewardess gives the description of what to happen when the plane is about to crash. She says, "Put on your own mask first, and then assist your children." That's so important for parents as far as your faith. If you want your children to have a strong faith, put on your own mask first. Develop your own strong and committed Catholic faith first. And then you'll be able to help your children with their faith. Now remember, Hal Roach, the comedian, said that there's nothing in those oxygen masks. They're just there to muffle your screams as you're going down. You know, they try to scare you in the airport. You know, you approach the airport, and all you see is one big bright word shining: terminal. And as you're going down, the pilot says, "We're now approaching our final descent." You say, "Make it your next or final descent." So put on your own faith first. Develop your own strong faith, then you can pass it on to your children. So how do we develop a strong Catholic faith? Some suggestions would be the reading of good Catholic books. St. Francis de Sales said that one bad book can destroy your faith, and one good book can convert you. A friend of mine read the book called The Secret of the Rosary by St. Louis de Montfort when he was a fallen away Catholic. He then came back to the sacraments, was ordained a priest, and has been a priest now for about 5 years by reading one good Catholic book, The Secret of the Rosary. So read good Catholic books. You know, the average American reads less than one book a year. If we just read 15 minutes a day, that would be one book a month, or 12 books a year. Or better yet, if you want to be one of the most highly educated Catholics in America, read 1 hour a day, that's a book a week, 52 books a year, 520 books in 10 years. You will be a brilliant theologian like Father Cornelius O'Brien if you read 1 hour a day. Next, listen to cassette tapes in your car. Don't listen to the radio. Avoid the temptation of wasting your time listening to the radio. Listen to good Catholic tapes. Listen to the Father Ken Roberts and the Benedict Rochelles and the Mother Teresa's and the Bishop Sheen's. I myself have over 4,000 cassette tapes and over 5,000 books. People come into my office and say, "Father, tell me honestly, have you read all those books? Have you listened to all those tapes?" I say, "Of course not, but I feel smarter just sitting in my office, surrounded by all these great wisdom and knowledge." Also would encourage you to delve into the Catechism of the Catholic Church, not only the New Catechism, but the Catechism of the Council of Trent and the Catechism of Pius X. A lot of great catechetical works out there. So read and study your faith, and of course, prayer. Prayer is the most powerful thing you can do for you to strengthen your faith, and also to pass the faith on to your children. I love the story of Mrs. Vaughan from England. She had 8 children, and she prayed, "Lord, please, if it's your will, inspire one of my kids to become a priest or a nun." Well, out of her 8 children, 5 became priests and 3 became nuns, because she prayed every day before the Blessed Sacrament. She made a holy hour every day. 5 out of those 5 priests, 2 became bishops and 1 became an archbishop. So prayer is what passes the faith onto your children. So we live in an age where many Catholics have a very weak faith. They don't know their faith. And because of that, they've not passed the faith on to their children. I remember the story of a CCD teacher that asked the kids during religion class, during the Old Testament class, he said, "Who knocked down the walls of Jericho?" And he said, "Jimmy, who knocked them down?" Jimmy says, "Well, it wasn't me. I didn't do it." Well, the teacher got a little bit worried about Jimmy's lack of knowledge of the faith, and the next day was in the supermarket and saw Jimmy's mom and said, "You know, yesterday I asked Jimmy who knocked down the walls of Jericho, and he said it wasn't him." The mother says, "Well, if my boy says he didn't knock down those walls, he did not knock them down." Well, the teacher was even more worried at the horrendous state of knowledge of the Bible. And so she decided to visit the home. And the father was there, and she explained the situation, explained what the child said, explained what the mother said. But the father says, "Look, I don't want any trouble. Just how much does this wall cost?" So we live in an age of ignorance of the faith. I think it's one of the greatest problems in the church today is that adult Catholics do not know their faith as well as they should. And that's why I commend you for being here, to develop your faith and to strengthen it through the talks and through the workshops that you've been participating in this weekend. Other ways to strengthen your faith would be to use things like the television in a positive way. I know many of you don't have a TV, and I commend you for that. But if you do have it, you can use it for good, namely by bringing in Mother Angelica, watching good Catholic videos, watching good documentaries. Make sure you use it as a good servant. That's what TV is, can be a good servant, but it's a bad ruler. If we become the slave of it and watch all sorts of terrible things, it corrupts the family. If we use it for good, it can strengthen the family. Other ways to pass on the faith in the home would be to make sacramentals available to the children. This would be things such as the crucifix in their rooms, a holy water font, perhaps as they enter the room, maybe a picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. I hope all of you have done the enthronement of the Sacred Heart in your home. I'm sure most of you have. If you haven't, perhaps you could consider doing that, to enthrone the image of the Sacred Heart. You could also have the house blessed at the same time. If you read the Summa of St. Thomas Aquinas, he mentions that the most best and appropriate time to have your house blessed, to invite the priest over, is dinner time. Some of you might not have known what St. Thomas Aquinas said about that. So have your house blessed and have the Sacred Heart enthroned. Of course, regular confession would be a great blessing for the family. Try to get your family to confession once a month. Some families will then afterwards take the kids out for pizza or out for a bite to eat, make it a family occasion. I call it a monthly confession as balancing your spiritual checkbook. Imagine if you didn't balance the checkbook in 10 years. Look how difficult that would be to have a straightened out spiritual life. But if you go on a regular basis, get the kids to go at least once a month, then they'll be in much better spiritual condition. You know, it's been said that Michelangelo, before he worked on any of his great works of art, would always go to confession to purify his soul before glorifying God through religious art. Of course, we're presuming that all of you are already attending Sunday Mass and perhaps even daily Mass. If you're not going to daily Mass, and if you can, according to the duties of your state and life, I encourage you to try to attend daily Mass. This was a great inspiration for me as a little kid, seeing my mom and dad every morning at 6:30 go to daily Mass before school, before they woke me up for school. And then when I was in high school, they said, you know, if you ever want to go, just let us know. They never forced me, never forced my sisters to go, but we knew that every day they were going to morning Mass. And then one day I just said, well, maybe tomorrow, why don't you wake me up for Mass? And I started going to daily Mass because of their example. So besides Sunday Mass being the most important event of your family for the week, I encourage you, if you can, attend daily Mass, receive Jesus each day in the Holy Eucharist, and have Jesus as the bread of life, the spiritual food for the journey that we need to get to heaven and to our promised land of heaven. Other practical suggestions for the family, I'm sure some of this has been brought up this weekend, of things you can do during Advent. My family, when I was growing up, always had the manger scene, and whenever we did something good during Advent, we put a little piece of straw in the crib. And if we did something bad, we had to take out a piece of straw from the crib. And the idea was that our prayers and penance and acts of charity would give Jesus a very soft bed of straw to lay his head when he came on Christmas morning. Other families will have the wise men making a pilgrimage. You know, they start out way back in the back of the house, and every day they move up a couple feet. Down the hallway, the wise men come, if they don't get eaten by the dog, that is. And they eventually arrive on Epiphany and are there to worship the Christ child. We also, growing up, use the Advent wreath. I'm sure you talked about that. The Advent calendar is a great idea. During Lent, some of the suggestions would be, in one book I read, you can have the kids, whenever they make a sacrifice during Lent, they would put a bean in a jar. And then that's what is used to make their meal on Good Friday. So the more they've offered up, the more food they get. I'll tell you, there's even a better kind of bean. It's called a jelly bean. And the kids will love this one. Instead of just giving them candy on Easter, let that be the fruit of their prayers and acts of kindness and acts of charity during the season. Have a big place for the candy. Every time they do something good, they can put a jelly bean in a jar. Then they get the fruit of their labors on Easter morning. It's one way to draw a correlation between the prayers and the acts of charity and the amount of candy they get on Easter morning. Those are just some practical suggestions to pass on the faith to your children. The next letter in family is A. It stands for apostolic. And not only should our families be families of strong faith, but we need to have apostolic Catholic families. This is what Vatican II says, that by our very baptism, by our confirmation, we're called to be apostles. It's not an option. It's something placed upon us as a solemn responsibility by Christ himself, by our very baptism and confirmation. Baptism makes us children of God. Adults makes us apostles, soldiers for Christ. I remember out in Kentucky, there was an old bishop who had lost most of his sight. And as he was confirming the kids, they were kneeling down along the altar rail. He went and imposed hands. And as he got to the end of the altar rail, he imposed hands upon the little altar rail pillar that was there. And then he came by and he anointed that little altar rail pillar. It's the only confirmed altar rail that I know of in Kentucky. So confirmation is what makes us strong in our faith and makes us soldiers to fight the good fight of passing on the faith. If we are not apostolic, we will eventually lose our faith. Father Faber put it best in his book called The Blessed Sacrament. He says, if you do not try to convert the world will convert you. It's as simple as that. If you're not out there actively trying to bring the world to Christ, the world will take you away from Christ. And this is a law of nature. What we do not spread, what we do not use, we gradually lose and it deteriorates. Whether it be a foreign language that we've learned back in college or in high school, what happens if you don't learn your don't use your French or your Spanish or your Italian? You lose it. Same thing with muscles, the same thing with talents and gifts. We tend to lose what we do not make use of, whether it be even in the order of nature. Things like they say that an airplane will rust out faster sitting on the runway, never being flown, than one that flies on a regular basis. What house will look better after 20 years? A house that's lived in and used, or a house that's been abandoned? What about a boat? They say a boat will rust out and deteriorate faster by just sitting there in the marina than it will by sailing on the seven seas. So if we wish to hold on to our faith, we must be able to spread our faith. Look at a pool of water that is not flowing. It becomes stagnant like the Dead Sea. But look at the water that receives life, like the Sea of Galilee, receives the Jordan River and then gives it forth. It's fresh and teeming with fish. Our faith is very much the same. If we keep it to ourselves, it becomes stagnant and begins to lose our faith even. The Holy Father recommends that families undertake apostolates to other families. He calls it like unto like. He says fathers are called to evangelize other fathers, mothers spread the faith among other mothers. He even says children are called to evangelize by spreading the faith to other children. So I'd encourage you to become apostolic in some way. And there's so many beautiful ministries and apostolates that the Church gives us. Some of you might already be involved in organizations or movements like the Apostolate for Family Consecration, the Knights of Columbus, the Schoenstatt Rosary Campaign, pro-life work, teaching religious education, being involved in the Blue Army, being involved in St. Joseph's Covenant Keepers. My own parents found a vocation in the Legion of Mary. Like, that's how they met, was at a Legion meeting. So if there are any single people here today, I encourage you, try to go to one of the meetings. You might meet your future spouse at the meeting. In fact, there was one Presidium in Cork over in Ireland actually had 5 legion marriages out of that one Presidium. That was a very popular group among all the single people that were looking for a spouse. My dad was invited to the Legion after resisting for 2 years. This priest, Father Zoll, who tried to get my dad into the Legion way back in the 1950s, tried again and again and again to get my dad to join. My dad says, no, that's just a group of old ladies. I don't want to join them. Well, this priest is my dad's spiritual director. And so one occasion, my dad went to confession in spiritual direction, and the priest says, Bill, for your penance, I'm going to ask you to join the Legion of Mary. So my dad's been in the Legion for 40 years. I say, Dad, what in the world did you confess to get 40 years of penance? That's quite a lengthy penance. Well, actually, it wasn't so much a penance. It was more of a recommendation that this priest gave my dad, and he certainly was very blessed, because that's how I met my mom, was through the Legion. And then, you know, even when the 3 of us kids were born, my mom never missed her weekly meeting. She always gave birth on the day after the weekly meeting, and by the following week, she was ready to go again. Now, you can never find out exactly what year my mom joined the Legion. My dad says she was in the first covered wagon Presidium in the United States. But they've both been in the Legion over 40 years. And for their honeymoon, they went to Ireland and Lourdes. And they went to Ireland to spend time with Frank Duff, the founder of the Legion, and they went to Lourdes to, you know, consecrate their marriage to the Blessed Mother. Now, the unique thing about their honeymoon was that Father Zoll went with them on their honeymoon. It's the only couple I know that actually asked the priest to go with them on their honeymoon. My sister was not willing to take me along, and down to St. Thomas and St. John's on their honeymoon, but actually, one of our couples that just got married from Our Lady of Angels, they got married on August 2nd, and I went with them on their honeymoon to France and Italy. So they also had 51 other chaperones on that trip. But they're actually a great Legion couple as well. So this is how my mom and dad found their apostolate in the church, was through the Legion. For you, it might be something else. But make sure it is some avenue in which to serve God and to serve the church. Now, when we were little, we saw the great love and devotion my mom and dad had, so we asked if we too could belong, and they started a junior Legion of Mary for me and my 2 sisters. We've been in ever since. My mom and dad were married on September 8, 1958. They chose the birthday of the Blessed Mother to get married on because they saw Our Lady's importance in their marriage, and they wanted the Legion to be a vocation, and it has been. It's been a way of life for them. So the example of my parents has been a great blessing to me, to become an apostolic family. The third letter is M. It stands for a Marian family. A Marian family. Again, Father Hardin says that only Marian families will be able to survive well into the year 2000. Again, just because of the difficulties that are facing family life today. So some recommendations on how to become a truly Marian family will be: make sure you have an image of Our Lady in the home. It could be a picture, it could be a statue, perhaps the Pilgrim Virgin statue, or the image of Our Lady of Schoenstatt, which is a beautiful image that even travels throughout the diocese and into the homes of families that are involved in the Rosary campaign. Perhaps you might even say the family rosary. I know many of you do. At least say a decade a day. Remember, a decade a day keeps the devil away, as we say. I love the t-shirt. Have you seen the t-shirt that says, call home, pray the rosary? The Blessed Mother hasn't heard from you in decades. Very clever t-shirt. You know, Pope Pius X said that if there were 1 million families saying the rosary every day, the entire world would be saved. It's quite a promise by a very saintly Pope, Pope Pius X. You know, one day Pope Pius IX was in the Vatican. He was showing people around the Vatican, some of his friends, giving them a tour. And they said, Holy Father, what is the greatest treasure in the Vatican? Is it the Sistine Chapel? He said, no. Is it the Pietà by Michelangelo? He said, no. He said, well, what in the world is the greatest treasure in the Vatican? He pulled out his rosary beads. He said, this is the greatest treasure in all of the Vatican. Pretty impressive for, again, another very saintly Pope. Other things you can say in your family perhaps would even be the Angelus once a day. Maybe when you're about to have dinner, you can say grace, maybe say the Angelus together. Others will renew their Sacred Heart consecration by saying the daily renewal prayer. That's quite a beautiful prayer. Some families have made the consecration according to the teachings of St. Louis de Montfort. I'd encourage you to read the book, The True Devotion to Mary, which is the single best book ever written about the Blessed Mother in the history of Christianity. It's called True Devotion by St. Louis de Montfort. Every member of a Marian family should be wearing the brown scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Remember that Our Lady promised that whoever dies wearing the brown scapular would not suffer eternal fire. A great promise from Our Lady. She also said, I will descend into purgatory on the first Saturday after your death and bring you into heaven. So again, I recommend you die on a Friday night around 11:30. Quarter of 12 is even better. So that's if you want to take advantage of the Sabbatine privilege. Every member of the family, if possible, should wear the miraculous medal of called the Medal of the Immaculate Conception. You know, it's amazing the stories of conversions and returns to the sacraments that have given this medal the title the Miraculous Medal. You know, Alphonse Ratisbon, some of you have heard of him, he was an anti-Catholic Jew who hated the Catholic Church because his brother had become a Catholic. He despised the Catholic Church. And yet one of his friends said, do me the favor of just wear this little medal, you know, I know you don't believe in it, which is fine, just wear it for my sake, and say this prayer every day. It was the Memorare. Well, he says, well, it can't hurt, I don't believe in God. Well, I believe in God, I don't believe in Jesus, don't believe in Mary, so it can't hurt. So he said it every day. 4 days later, he was sightseeing, and a friend of his said, let's go into this church. So he reluctantly went in. He was drawn over to a side chapel of St. Michael, and there he fell to his knees. The Blessed Mother appeared just like this. He never actually looked up to her face. He just looked at her hands, which were so motherly and so radiating God's love and mercy and forgiveness. He was instantly converted, infused with the entire knowledge of the Catholic faith. He skipped RCIA. He did not have to read anything. He was completely infused with knowledge of the Catholic faith. They took him to a priest. The priest asked him questions, hypostatic union, transubstantiation, seven sacraments. He knew everything about the Catholic faith, so the priest baptized him 6 days later. So 10 days after he wore the medal, he converted. Cardinal Newman, it was a month after Cardinal Newman began wearing the miraculous medal that Cardinal Newman was given the grace to become a Catholic and to leave the Anglican Church and to become a member of the Roman Catholic Church. I love Father Hardin's story of the miraculous medal. Father Hardin was just 1 year ordained. It was in February, and he had been visiting a hospital. In this hospital, he came across a young boy, 10 years old, who had been sledding. The boy's sled went off the path. He went headfirst into a tree, cracked open his skull, suffered permanent brain damage, concussion. Well, Father Hardin had heard a Vincentian tell about the miraculous medal. And when he was sitting there as a seminarian, he says, what is a Vincentian, though, telling us Jesuits, you know, about anything? But he remembered that the Vincentian said, this medal really works. I mean, if you ever have like a hopeless case, somebody in a coma, give that person a miraculous medal. Place it around their neck and say the enrollment prayer. So Father Hardin says, well, I might as well. And so he did not have a medal, and he needed the medal to bless and to place over the neck. The parents didn't have one. He found one of the nuns that worked in the hospital. She didn't have one. He said, I reprimanded this nun for not having a miraculous medal. He said, what kind of a nun are you, not having a miraculous medal? Well, she went down, opened the gift shop, got a miraculous medal. Father Hardin blessed it, placed it over the boy's neck, and even though he had been in a coma for 2 weeks, he opened his eyes, instantaneously tried to sit up. He took out the devices in his mouth, and he said, Mommy, I'm hungry, I want some chocolate ice cream. A great miracle had occurred, so they called the doctors, they did x-rays, complete healing, changed his whole life. when he said this, and he's been a priest now 50 years, he said he would not be a priest, most likely, would not be speaking to that particular congregation had not that miracle occurred when he was a young priest. My favorite story is the woman up in Baltimore that was wearing her miraculous medal and was robbed on August 31st, 1989 by this thief that came up at a bus stop and ripped her pocketbook from her. She pushed him away. He took out a gun and shot her from 5 feet away. The bullet hit her miraculous medal, broke the medal in two, but deflected the bullet. They took her to John Hopkins Hospital. The doctor examined her and said, "I believe that that medal saved your life." Now, of course, the moral of the story is that never, ever go to Baltimore, because that's the moral of the story. Now, if you do go, make sure you wear your miraculous medal. Once I told that to kids, and she said, little girl says, "But my grandmother lives in Baltimore." I said, "Okay, you can go, but just make sure you wear your miraculous medal." You might wish to consecrate your children to the Immaculate Heart of Mary at their baptism. I know my parents did that for my two sisters and myself when we were baptized. On the day of our baptism, we were consecrated to Our Lady. Also, I recommend that you could attend Mass on the first Saturdays of each month in honor of our Blessed Mother. Perhaps as a family you can do this. You can say the morning offering through the Blessed Mother when you offer everything to Jesus through Mary each morning when you wake up. And at night, you do your examination of conscience, say your act of contrition, and always end your prayers by saying a Marian prayer. A Hail Mary, the Hail Holy Queen, something along those lines. If you go to a monastery, you'll notice that the last prayer they ever say is a Salve Regina that they sing. So we should end our days as well saying a beautiful prayer like that to our Blessed Mother. The next letter is L, which stands for a loving family. Become a loving family. You might wish to take 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and handwrite it and stick it on your mirror and look at it every day. Remember, love is patient, love is kind. We should read that every day. They say the best gift you can give to your children is to love their father or to love their mother. That the best gift you can give to a child is to love their parents. And love in the family, as the Pope says, is the most important ingredient. It has so many benefits. My buddy Zig Ziglar tells a story of the West German insurance company that did exhaustive studies and found that men who give their wives a big hug and a big wet smacker, not the kind you give to Aunt Matilda, but a big kiss before going to work, lived an average of 5.5 years longer than men who went to work of their own power. So men, your very lives are at stake here. You can live 5.5 years longer. These men also were much more highly motivated. They had an income of 30% higher than the men who did not give their wife a big hug and kiss before they left for work. Of course, my favorite story of love between husband and wife is the one couple that's been married 25 years, and the husband, I asked him, how has he remained so much in love over these years? He says, "Well, Father, every week my wife and I go to a little Italian restaurant. It's incredibly romantic, fine candlelight dining, gourmet food, bottle of wine, music, dancing." He says, "By going there each week, it has kept our romance alive. I go on Tuesdays and she goes on Fridays." I said, "Are you just teasing me?" He says, "Only about the last part. But I've taken her out on a date every week of our marriage, and this has kept our romance alive." Now, as far as love for the kids, remember what one Christian psychologist says. Your kids need 4 hugs a day for survival, 8 hugs a day for emotional well-being, and 12 hugs a day for emotional growth. So I encourage you to give your kids 12 hugs a day. Remember that kids spell love, T-I-M-E. Growing up during the summer, my dad would take each of us out on our own special day. Like, I would go fishing with him, my other sister would go to the Franklin Institute, my other sister would go to a doll museum. And so we had some special time, and my mom would do some things with my sisters, my dad with me. So here it is, 20 years after, 30 years later, I still remember that special time spent with family. Lastly, the last letter in Y stands for the year 2000 and how all of us are called to prepare for this great year. It's the desire of the heart of Pope John Paul II not to let this year go by in vain, not to let these next few years of preparation fall by the wayside. So the Holy Father wants us to spend these years in prayer and preparation for the year 2000. This year, even though it's almost over, is still the year of Jesus Christ, in which we focus our attention on Christ, on the sacrament of baptism, on the virtue of faith, and see Mary as the model of faith and the mother of God the Son. Next year, the year of 1998, is the year of the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Father wants us to focus on the Holy Spirit, on the sacrament of confirmation, on the virtue of hope, and to see Mary as spouse of the Holy Spirit and model of hope. The year 1999 is the year of God the Father, where the Pope wants us to focus on the Heavenly Father, the sacrament of penance, the virtue of charity, and to see Mary as daughter of the Father and the model of charity. And then to prepare for the great year of the year 2000. And the Holy Father predicts, and many others as well, that the year 2000 will be the greatest year in the history of the Church as far as conversions, return to the sacraments, graces, indulgences, blessings being poured out upon the Church. When that holy year door opens, that represents the flooding of graces that are going to pour forth from the Church. So we're coming into a new Advent, a perfect way to end our Advent seminar, to reflect upon the new Advent that the Holy Father wants to dawn in the Church. This new time of a springtime in the Catholic Church, where we as families will approach the year 2000 with minds and hearts renewed, with an openness to all the graces that will be poured out over these next few years, and to realize that the year 2000, the great jubilee, will be an extraordinary year like never seen before in the history of the Catholic Church. God bless you.